Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you for joining us, everybody, live worldwide on Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here. Also a pleasure to have Liz Chong here on the show. She's a highly sought-after wellness coach and EFT tapping practitioner. You know, after becoming a certified health coach through the Institute for Integrative Nutrition in 2013, Liz recognized that most of her clients were struggling to stick to healthy eating. And they were doing so because they had an ingrained pattern of escaping from their emotions with food. With Liz's practical, holistic approach, she helps one create a mindset around food so you can step into a life that's enriched with self-care and self-love and tools to better manage stress and emotions. One of the most effective tools she uses is to help us on our own healing journey. And that is emotional freedom techniques, which involves tapping on the endpoints of energy meridians. And this is, while it may sound to some a little different, EFT tapping is actually scientifically proven as a modality that lowers stress, hormones, and has been shown up to really help with cravings, weight loss, phobias, anxiety, emotional distress, pain, and lots more. Liz wholeheartedly incorporates tapping into her work with amazing results. Another part of her work entails offering workplace wellness services. She offers workshops and programs to help employees and companies prioritize self-care and well-being in order to reduce stress and burnout. The pandemic has significantly increased stress among employees in many sectors, resulting in high turnover rates. Liz reminds us that a health coach doesn't tell you what to do. They guide you in the right direction and support you to get there. She's the cheerleader, the partner, the biggest advocate. So excited to have her here from Los Angeles, California, to talk about her work as a wellness coach and EFT tapping practitioner. Join me in welcoming Liz Chacon here to the show. Liz, thank you very much for joining us on the program today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Jim. It's definitely a pleasure to be here. I'm really excited about this conversation that we're going to have.
I am too. I love when I get a chance to explore with our guests and see what really makes them tick and the incredible work that they do. And with you, let's define the work as a health coach, but even before that, what were some of the things that pointed you in the direction of doing this work? What inspired you along the way to realize this is work that not only you were meant to do, you have to do because you really like to touch people's lives and help guide them along the way?
Sure, yeah. Before becoming a health coach, I was already working in the health promotion field. I have a master's in public health, and I chose to go into health promotion and health education when I was an undergrad in college, when I took a women's health class, and everything I was learning in that class just really inspired me. And I didn't even know that there was a career known as health education at that time, but my instructor was a health educator. And when I started learning more about what she did, I decided I wanted to go in that direction. And so that's where my passion for helping people make more informed decisions and supporting their health behaviors, helping them make habit changes, all of that became my passion. So I've been working in the health promotion field my whole career, over 30 years. But then I decided to kind of shift in this other direction, more specifically of health and wellness coaching, when I started to become a little bit burnt out, to be quite honest, from working within health and social service nonprofit organizations. Because even though I was very passionate about the work and I loved serving my community, it can be really hard work, especially when you're working on the front lines. And in fact, that's why I do some workplace wellness work with employees, because I know how difficult the work can be. But I also was working in managerial roles. A lot of my jobs involved being the director of different programs, and I decided I wanted to go back to the original reason for going into this field in the first place, which was to work more directly with people in terms of providing education, group education, and one-on-one work, et cetera. And so then I came across the advertisement to become a health coach through the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, and I thought, I'm going to give this a try. And honestly, right before that, my last job in the field, my full-time job in the field was I was the director of a home visiting program for pregnant and postpartum women. And the staff that did the home visits were parent coaches. And they'd come back and tell all the stories of the amazing work they were doing with our clients. And I felt sort of jealous, to be quite honest with you, because I sort of felt like I want to be doing that work directly with women. And so that's what led me to enroll in the health coach training program and shift my career in this other direction.
That's fantastic. That's a wonderful progression of events for you. You know, in defining the work of a health coach, like I mentioned earlier, you remind us that a health coach doesn't tell you what to do. They guide you in the right direction and support you to get there. You're the cheerleader, the partner, and the biggest advocate, right? Tell us about that as you describe some of the work you do as a health coach.
Sure. Well, I think that what's most important for a coach is to be able to meet their clients where they are. Because, sure, a health coach provides information, guidance, resources, tools, but it's really about being able to listen really well and even read between the lines of what people are saying and tune into their emotions and how they're feeling and figure out, like, what their roadblocks are and be able to use all these different skills to be able to help them, to support them and help hold them accountable. And a lot of it is just figuring out, like, okay, this is where you want to go. This is where you currently are. What's getting in the way of you being where you want to be, and working with them very closely to figure out what's going to work best for them? Because the thing is, everybody's different. And I can, you know, give the same, there can be certain information that may help two different people, but both of those people won't necessarily be able to implement those recommendations. So it's figuring out what's going to work for the individual, and that requires a lot of very deep listening and being able to be objective, because I may have my own biases about what's worked for me in my life, but that doesn't mean it's going to work for my client.
Right, exactly. You know, we hear health coach and, of course, nutritionist oftentimes. What would you say, Luz, is the difference between a health coach and a nutritionist?
Nutritionists have more specialized training in the field of dietetics, and so they're trained to do, I would say, a deeper assessment of the dietary needs of their clients or patients and provide more specific recommendations about their diet and even supplements, especially if they're working with people that have health conditions, like, let's say, diabetes or food allergies or celiac disease. And so what they do is sometimes also referred to as medical nutrition therapy. On the other hand, a health coach, we also have knowledge in nutrition. And in my case, I went through my training through the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. So there was a lot of information that I learned about nutrition, and I've done a lot of ongoing continuing education to learn more, because I like to stay very much abreast of what's going on. And nutrition can be very controversial. There's so many different diets out there and so many different opinions, but that also comes back to what I learned as a health coach in my training program is bioindividuality, meaning you can have two people that follow the same diet, and let's say they both follow it exactly, but it works for one person and not another, because every person's physiology is different, their gut health is different. But as health coaches, we're well-versed in nutrition, but we also focus more on goal setting, helping our clients identify what exactly they want to achieve, and using tools like SMART goals, meaning being able to set goals that are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound, and then helping them figure out, okay, well, what action steps or what habits do I need to change in order to get to reach my goal? But we also, as health coaches, I think, take a much more holistic approach, because we don't only address the eating habits or the health concern, like, let's say, well, yeah, the health concern. We also look at other areas such as stress, sleep, exercise, life balance, and other lifestyle issues, even spirituality. In my health coach training program, they like to say that all of those different areas of our lives, spirituality, relationships, exercise, all of that, those are primary foods, and the food that we actually eat are secondary foods. So that was their philosophy. And so I think that really reinforced, I think, the holistic approach that I already had. But I do think that that's what is the difference between a health coach and a nutritionist, is that nutritionists are obviously going to be much more focused on the eating habits, whereas we look at all areas of a person's life. So we're kind of like a health coach and life coach wrapped up into one.
Right, exactly. You know, here's an area that a lot of us definitely, you know, partake in, probably, comfort food. Why is it that comfort food is so appealing to us instead of nutritional foods? I know there's so much emotional attached to it. There's family history, childhood, holidays. There's so many things that are also affiliated with the food that we identify. We connect with the food that adds to that comfort feeling, as much as it may be the taste and the flavor and the texture. There's also other things that we associate and or attach to comfort food, right?
Absolutely, and I love that you use the word attach, because a lot of my career was about attachment theory, but, you know, that's a whole other issue. But yes, we definitely attach to foods. And a lot of that can go back to, like you're saying, our childhood, our family, our culture, the foods that we ate for celebrations and holidays, all of that. But in terms of why comfort food is so appealing and why so many people have a hard time resisting it, I say there can be many reasons. But I think from my perspective and my work with clients, I think there are three things that are the top reasons. First one is taste. The second one is how comfort foods tend to affect our physiology. And the third one is convenience. So when we talk about comfort foods, of course, they're going to vary by person, what is a comfort food for one person versus another. But generally speaking, we're not talking about broccoli or kale, right? Those aren't the foods that we're eating to soothe ourselves. Comfort foods
mashed
tend
potatoes.
To be more like... Right, exactly, mashed potatoes. Well, and I think they fall into three categories. Sweets, so like cookies, chocolate, ice cream, donuts, pastries. The second category would be more the refined carbs, like what you just said, the mashed potatoes, but also bread, pizza, pasta. And the third category would be salty snacks, like chips and French fries, things like that, right? So with what all those three categories of comfort foods have in common is that they're highly processed. And whenever we're talking about something that's processed, that comes in a package, they tend to have five key ingredients, which are sugar, some form of refined starch, whether it's white flour or refined corn or potatoes, like going back to the mashed potato example. The third thing would be salt. The fourth would be fats, particularly in the form of vegetable oil or seed oil. And then the fifth thing is synthetic flavorings. And these might be labeled as natural flavorings or artificial flavorings, but in both cases, they really are synthetic flavorings. And food manufacturers know that sugar is addictive. In fact, there's some studies out there that show that it's 8 times more addictive than cocaine. But the combination of sugar, salt, fat, and flavorings makes processed foods even more addictive. In fact, it's been established that food companies actually hire scientists to engineer foods with just the right combination of these ingredients that I mentioned to make them titillate your taste buds and so that you keep coming back for more. They even have a name for this. It's called the bliss point. And so these foods don't just taste good. They can actually cause us to release the feel-good hormone dopamine, which gives us this feeling of pleasure and happiness in that moment. So I think that answers the part about, like, well, I mentioned that there's three reasons, right? The taste and how it affects our physiology. So I think that addresses those two. And then the third thing I mentioned was convenience. So processed foods are obviously very convenient, and our modern food environment makes them so accessible. We basically have access to them 24/7. And so all of this, I think, makes comfort foods very appealing, especially when people are really busy because maybe they don't have the time to cook, or maybe they don't have the cooking skills, or they don't like to cook. So it's easy to see how the physiology and the food environment, the combination of those two things, make it very difficult to not turn to comfort foods when we're stressed.
That's right, exactly. It's also critical for us not to indulge in junk food, right? You're talking a little bit about that now, the processed and all the sugar and everything that's added to everything, but not to indulge. And does that mean also not to indulge at all? Or are there times when it's your birthday party, you can have the slice of cake, just don't have the whole cake?
Absolutely. Yeah. We don't have to be perfect. And in fact, trying to be perfect causes us more stress, I would say. A lot of the clients that I work with, I think, struggle with perfectionism, and I like to refer to myself as a recovering perfectionist. So, yeah, there's no reason that we can't have treats once in a while. So what I actually like to recommend to my clients is either 80-20 or 90-10. So the 80-20 rule means make 80% of your food real whole food that's unprocessed or minimally processed. And then 20% of it, you know, can be things that, you know, don't fall into that category. Now, if somebody has a health condition or they are working toward losing weight, and we know that there's an obesity epidemic in our country. In fact, I think the last statistic I saw was that about 70% of the U.S. population is overweight, and about 40% of those are actually obese. And so it's definitely, you know, a very challenging situation. Weight loss is not easy. It's complex. Yeah, to get back to your question, so we can't be perfect, but if somebody is trying to overcome or improve a health condition or lose weight, then I would say the 90-10 rule, making 90% of your diet whole real food, would be the way to go. And I think it's just important to keep in mind that whether we call it junk food or we call it comfort foods, like some of the foods we've talked about, is that they don't provide the nutrition that our bodies need to stay healthy and to function well, those vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals like antioxidants. But also those ingredients that are in the junk food or comfort foods that I've mentioned, they increase our risk of both obesity and chronic conditions, whether it's diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, cancer, gut issues. In fact, the gut is really the foundation of our health. We need to have a balanced gut microbiome. So the thing is that comfort foods can be very addictive, as I've discussed, but they also can influence our palates. The more we eat foods like that, the more our taste buds become used to them because they're highly palatable, and then we tend to want less of the real whole food. So the other thing, I think it's really important to know that there are hidden sugars in most processed foods, even savory foods. So it's not just the sweets or the desserts. And that could really add up. The American Heart Association recommends that women limit their intake of added sugar to 24 grams per day and men to 36 grams. Yet the average person consumes around 88 grams of sugar a day. And so this is something that can be surprising to people. In fact, it was surprising to me because I thought I ate a relatively healthy diet before I became a health coach. Actually, when I was in training, I was struggling with some of my own health issues like heartburn and brain fog. I would have mood swings, digestive issues. I felt tired all the time, so I was struggling with fatigue. And through my training, I realized that I had a gut imbalance and the foods I was eating were putting me on the sugar roller coaster because I would have these real spikes and dips in my blood sugar. And once I broke the sugar habit, all of those symptoms went away, and I even lost 15 pounds. And so I share that because I wasn't necessarily eating a lot of sweets or desserts, but just because I was eating a fair amount of processed foods, those sugar grams can add up really quickly. And so having experienced this difference in my health and learning everything that I've learned makes me just really passionate about supporting people to shift to a healthier diet. But again, that doesn't mean we have to be perfect because, yeah, a slice of cake on your birthday, a slice of pie on Thanksgiving, all of those things are fine. It's more about the percentage of real whole food versus processed or junk food.
I would imagine, as we're saying, the pandemic has sort of added to the situation. People were going for things that provided a sense of solace and comfort and ease, things that, again, maybe go back to their childhood or whatever it may be. And also just the quickness of it all. And the pandemic has really upped the ante on a lot of different things, including the way we've been eating, right?
Most definitely. Yeah, wow. I've seen such an increase in emotional eating since the pandemic started. And in fact, I've seen research or surveys that show that 49% of the people in the U.S. gained weight during the pandemic, with the average weight gain being about 29 pounds.
No comment.
So in my experience, yeah, well, you know, it's funny because for a while they were referring to it as the COVID, what was it, the pandemic 19 or the COVID 19? I mean, I know the name of it is COVID 19,
right,
but meaning that people were
right
gaining about 19 pounds.
Yeah.
But then
COVID
it
comfort
increased
food.
To 29. Yeah, exactly.
29. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's on average. So that means some people obviously less, but then other people more. And even though, like, we're not in the same place and with the pandemic, it's not completely gone, but we're not where we used to be. But I think that those habits were kind of established and they can be hard to break or to get back on track. And my experience in working with clients, I think there have been several reasons for this. First, we went through what I would refer to as a collective trauma. It was so stressful. It's been very stressful. And so if you already had a tendency to soothe with food, to eat emotionally, then I think this drove that urge even more, or that behavior even more. Another factor, I think, is working from home. And I work from home, and I'm an advocate of it, and I think there's lots of benefits to it, particularly not having to commute or deal with traffic, because that's a stressor in and of itself, right? But when we're working from home 24/7, that gives us access to our refrigerators and our pantries 24/7. So, yeah, and so, you know, you're at work and at home working and something stressful is going on, it can be so easy to just go and get something to eat to soothe yourself. And then because we couldn't go out as much, there's all these food delivery apps that existed since before, but I think that there's so much more of those types of services. So I talked about processed food being so convenient. Well, it's become even more convenient with these apps that we have on our phones where we have instant access. And I think with the pandemic, that was the case even more. And yeah, that ability to have those apps offered a safety and convenience, but I think it resulted in the sort of an unintended consequence of people eating out even more. Because the truth is that cooking our own food is the healthiest way to go because we have control over what ingredients we're putting into it. And I would say that a third factor is the isolation. And of course, we're not quite in that same place anymore at this stage of the pandemic. But when people weren't able to go out to visit their friends and family, to attend events, I think all of that really interfered with people's enjoyment and pleasure and even their life balance. And so there is a tendency for people who struggle with emotional eating to eat comfort foods to fill a void or just to have more pleasure because they couldn't do those pleasurable things that they were used to.
That is so correct, right? You know, I can't believe the time is flipping by here, but you integrate EFT tapping into your work. We've got about maybe 3 minutes left. Can you tell us a little bit about EFT and how you apply it into the work?
Absolutely. So you kind of defined it at the beginning in the introduction, that it's a mind-body stress modality where you tap using your own fingers on what are called meridian endpoints. And there are a lot of clinical research studies to back up the effectiveness with lots of different issues like the ones that you mentioned. So for me, I decided to integrate it because when I started working with clients, I quickly realized that they struggled to stick to healthy eating because of their emotional eating. And so I wanted to learn a tool that would help help me help them on an even deeper level. And so I'm not only trained in EFT tapping, but also in something called tapping out of trauma, which allows me to go even deeper in terms of people's traumatic experiences, which sometimes can very much play in to what's happening in their current life. I mentioned that in my career, I used to work in maternal and child health, and there's so many ways in which that experience informs what I do currently with clients, even though it might seem very different. But the reality is that I have a very extensive background in attachment parenting, and the way we care and respond for children in the first year of lives or their lives is so critically important for them to develop emotionally or to have healthy emotional development, because children need to feel seen, safe, heard, understood, and accepted. And so we need to have a responsive caregiver that validates our feelings, and that allows us to learn how to regulate our emotions. And so when we didn't receive that, and unfortunately many people don't grow up with parents who have the skills to be able to validate our feelings and meet our needs in that way. And that doesn't mean that they didn't love us. They were just doing the best that they could with the tools that they had. But in my experience, people who struggle with emotional eating are doing so because they haven't, it's a way to self-soothe, and they didn't receive those tools early in life. And so EFT can become the way that they learn to reduce their stress and regulate their emotions.
Luz is definitely our cheerleader, our partner, and our biggest advocate. And if you would like her to be yours, make contact by going to her website, www, and I'll spell it out, luzchacon.com. Luz, thanks for joining us here on the show. The half hour has expired so quickly. But I hope we get a chance to explore some more, maybe hear some testimonials, things of that nature. That would be a pleasure. Thanks for joining us on Close Up Radio today as my guest.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a tremendous pleasure.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We hope to explore some more. I would absolutely love that. You keep up the extraordinary work. Luz Chacon of Luz Chacon Wellness, luzchacon.com, the website. I'm your host, Jim Masters. Thank you for joining us on Close Up Radio. We appreciate you as well. From all of us, have a terrific day. Stay tuned. Another episode, another great guest comes up in just a moment. Till then, take care and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.